Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome everyone to a bat-filled episode of Brainstorm Brewery. Why is it a bat-filled episode? Because I'm blind like a bat, literally. My internet's shitting, so I get everyone else on Dr. Roboto mode, and they hear me in blips and beeps, so we'll see how this works out. But we're here for episode 108. I'm here. I'm your host, Marcel MTG. You can find me on Twitter. I'm also with my best friends. The most esteemed podcast host you can ever find. I got Ryan Bouchard.
See, that pause was so that you could say something, Ryan.
Oh, yeah, no, that's me. I'm a person.
He's like nodding along like, yeah. Well, he said my name on a podcast.
His like fellatio there a moment ago. A, we're his best friends and the best co-hosts, man.
I think he wants to ask us something.
I know.
He needs to borrow money, clearly.
Yes. I need $5. There's like a 3-piece deal at KFC and I want to get on it.
You gotta get that chicken, man.
I love chicken.
And so the other two
Thanks,
people
Ryan.
You
that
heard.
Added a lot.
No,
you added a lot.
That's gotta be like just a sound clip we play all the time.
I love chicken.
Oh, chicken is delicious. Fried chicken wings are my favorite.
Wow. Thanks, Ryan.
Continue.
I just have this like Billy Madison moment where everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to you.
I'll see you, penguin.
So the guy making you dumber by the minute by listening to him is Corbin Hostler.
That's probably not quite how that was supposed to come across, but yeah, that's me. Why not?
And then we got our resident asshole. Affectionately known as Jason Altz.
I'm affectionately known as my given name.
Yes.
What does that even mean?
Yes.
Okay, good.
But
people are being nice to you, they call you by your name.
But if anyone really knows the lore of the cast and they know about our fifth host, we have a fifth host, and everyone right now they know who it is. But if you don't know who it is, you need to know this guy. We got
John Medina. Oh wait.
Magic 8-Ball. The old Magic 8-Ball himself.
Oh, Jason's the other Max. Oh,
shit.
But no, we got the current pro, I believe we could call him now. Or is he there yet?
Right, yeah. I did it.
No, he got an email from Wizards today.
Technically a pro.
Dear pro tour player read the email and Ray's like, yeah, it's me. If you're not friends with Ray on Facebook, you should follow Ray on Facebook.
Yeah, good luck with that. I started deleting everyone.
No, you don't have to be friends. Like, they don't have to know when your birthday is, but they can still, follow you and read your status updates. Like, if you knew how to configure Facebook.
Sweet. Yeah, you can post public things or to just, friends only, and, followers will still see it on their wall.
That's cool.
Yeah, I just started getting people to follow me.
Anyways, we have here Mr. Raymond Perez, who has his rookie year this year on the Pro Tour done very, very well and is getting ready to go to the next Pro Tour and do very well again, which is why we have him on the cast this week.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Wow, you sound so enthusiastic, man.
I'm excited.
No, this is it's awesome because, it's sweet when I wake up and I'm like, man, I get to go to a Pro Tour. But this is the fourth Pro Tour in a row I go. I was like, man, I can't. I can wake up and be like, man, number 30, here we go again. See if I can get platinum. No, it's just surreal. That's all it is. So, I have to humble myself to it because I don't want to act like a kid because then people make fun of me.
That's fair because
they're gonna make fun of you regardless.
I have a net winning record against you lifetime. There, you're humbled.
But I beat you when it count with my blue red common uncommon deck versus your mono blue money to fairy deck.
Wasn't it? It was Guile. Yeah, it was. I was playing Guile at FNM. It was Ray's first FNM. We told the story on the cast.
Yeah.
Well, Ray does have to be humble because, I don't want to talk shit, but you didn't do so well at the last Pro Tour. In fact, you kind of fell off the train.
I had to PTQ for this fourth one, and that was kind of brutal.
Yeah. So what was it, 2 weeks after you got back from the pro tour? How did that little streak go for you?
I had to skip my friend's wedding to go to a PTQ in Michigan that was sealed for Portland. I won that one. I went to States on Sunday because I no longer had to go to Chicago. I won States. And then the next weekend I played the first modern PTQ, for Honolulu just because I didn't want to pay $1,200 for my plane ticket. Cause my silver invite qualified me for that already. And then I won that one. So I'm qualified for the next three pro tours minimum.
Well, that seems pretty good.
Yeah. So at worst case, I get to go six in a row.
And so are you officially dead in the player of the year race or rookie of the year race now?
Jared's
having an insane year. So
yeah. Look, that guy.
Jared who?
Jared Betcher. I think it's Betcher, Botcher. I think it's Betcher.
I believe it's Betcher.
Batch.
I actually don't know. So please tell me, like, what did he do?
I bet it's Boddicker or something like that, and everyone's just
watching
it.
Yeah, I don't know. All I know is it's a weird last name. Like, I don't want to butcher it. So, but I know, like, I've heard Betcher on coverage, so I assume they didn't get that wrong.
Yeah, don't Betcher his last name.
I'm gonna give you the coverage reporter angle here and say that it's Betcher because it is.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, you were at the last GP I was at too. Yep.
It's true.
But yep, no, he is severely ahead of me. I need to win the Pro Tour to.
Yeah, that sounds easy.
He could pull that off.
Yeah,
Pro
Tour, auto flat, get Rookie of the Year, get like two seats at the Players Champs, like
two seats. Well,
the winner of the PT.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it's worth pointing out that Ray's pro points this year would have, maybe not won it in other years, but he would have been right up in the hunt. But Jared's having such an insane rookie season that he's pretty much got locked up.
Yeah, if you remove Jared, like, you would technically be right.
Yeah, if you remove Jared, the only one that's kind of next to me is Oliver or Neil Oliver, and he's not qualified for Pro Tour. So he needs to get gold at the next GP in order to qualify for Portland.
Yeah.
But I think the only other year where I wouldn't win would be the Alexander Hayne year where he got 50 points and beat out, I think, Jesse Hampton.
Yeah, it turns out if you win the Pro Tour, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of Rookie of the Year points.
And it was 40 points still. I don't know if it was 30. So he got the majority of his points for winning a Pro Tour, which is insane. But the other years are like first place is 25 points, 23 points, 21 points, maybe 30 points, and I have close to 30 right now. I think I have 27 right now. So,
mm-hmm. You're looking forward to this Pro Tour, and we'll get into that a little later. But we want to before we go any farther, before we forget, talk Finance 101. So we asked Ray, as somebody who obviously is very good at playing but doesn't necessarily do finance. What's one of the things you want to hear about? And, and his response was, well, the traders and the traders who are out to get you. So, I mean, what's your experience in the past been like that, Ray, that where you're, what questions do you want us to answer?
Mostly it's when do you want to take a hit? Mostly I'm going to a GP. Let's say I'm short, five different cards. Like I've done this multiple times at a GP where it's like, hey, I need four more unhinged planes to have all the same art, or I need a quarter calling or something like that. And I go to I don't want to really mess around on the trade floors. I want to go strictly to like the people that have the cards. So I don't go to dealers, but I go to like the people who are like binder grinders basically. And I'm like, hey, I want this card. And they're like, okay, we'll make it work. And so it comes down to a lot of points where I'm not sure how much I'm willing to take a hit on or how much is like reasonable to take a hit on just to get what I need. And I've had it happen multiple times where I just went up and I was like, hey, I need that Noble Hierarch. At the PTQ I won, I had to trade a Noble Hierarch for three courses of crew fixes at the time where I think 15 and something else just to get the Noble. So I did it. I needed the card. I didn't want to spend $60, but I also don't know if that was the correct thing I should have done or if I should have just like went about it a different way.
Do you regret it?
Did you have the time
to go around the room and find somebody else who's going to be more reasonable? Like, at a certain point, it's like you use the N-word. And if you're using the N-word in finance, like, it means something. Like, you're telling the person it's up to their scruples at that point. Like, if you don't have time to, like, shop around and find somebody else who's got it and, like, try to get a better deal, just make the deal work because you need the card to play with. You're not going to not play the tournament because the guy wanted a little too much.
Right.
Like, it's too bad that guy pulled your pants down, and maybe you don't trade with him again, but, like, if the clock is ticking, just do what you got to do. No regrets. Like, right. You didn't pay cash. Like, you just, you know, paid trade value. Like, you did what you had to do. I wouldn't regret it. I wouldn't trade with that guy again.
Right.
But at the same time, like, don't worry about it. If you're in that situation and you have to give up some value to get the card you need and the tournament is about to start, like, you would have got your pants pulled down worse going to the dealer. If you took them that stack of cards and they put that at buy list value, then tacked on a 10 or 15% trade-in bonus, you probably would have had a very similar stack that you gave up.
And, you know, it goes beyond, too, just the obvious situation, I guess, of, you know, hey, the tournament's about to start. I need this in 2 minutes. I mean, it goes on, too. It's like when I was trading for foils for my Merfolk deck, if somebody had it, I just let them take what they want for it, basically, because, you know, I want that card enough that I'm not going to stress about it. And at some point, if you want to use the word need, or if you just really want a card that maybe you've been looking for a while, it's okay to lose value. You know, that said, there are certainly people out there trading who there's probably no other word to describe it than scummy.
Right. The sharks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, it's funny to eat, like, the term shark to me when I hear that, it's like somebody saying the word dame. Like, it just, you don't hear that anymore. You know, it's such an antiquated term. Mm-hmm. The shark. Like, it's just not really a thing anymore. What you have is people that are trading basically for their specs. Instead of paying cash for their specs, they're trading for cards they think are going to go up. You can't pull people's pants down because people have the mobile apps and, like, you'll get a bad reputation. Nobody wants to trade with someone who's jacking people. So, right. You know, like, what Corbin and Ryan and I have done all along, it's just been straight up with people and, like, encourage them to look up the prices and just, like, we've got good reputations. People know we have the cards they want and they'll come to us. People will be willing to give up value, you know, if to get the stuff they need. But we're not, you know, bending anybody over a barrel because, you know, just we don't have to because I'm training for cards that are going to go up later in my estimation. Well, so just to hear somebody called a shark, I just think that's silly because, like, it's not a thing anymore.
You know, back, you know, yeah, what? You know what? But there are still people that are unscrupulous. So to say that it's not a thing or that it can happen is just to be naive about the situation.
Well, there always be unscrupulous people.
Well, let's set the stage here. I mean, back in the day, and, you know, the day being 5 years ago, I guess, when not everyone had smartphones that could look up prices on a dime, you would have people who knew what the prices of all the cards were because they just did this, you know, and they would sit down and they would trade with people. And when you start laying out cards, they might be – the people who were unscrupulous would say, hey, you know, that Balefire lead you have that I know is $7 retail that you think is a dollar card, I'll just let – you know, we'll value that at a dollar. Or, hey, you think that this $4 card is a bulk rare. Well, I guess it's a bulk rare then. You know, those are those unscrupulous people. What we used to do back in the day is be, you know, you more honest with people, but you still are able to get those cards with higher margins. And you, you know, at some point did take advantage of the fact that not everyone knew all the prices.
Before you paint those people as completely awful people, because, like, I mean, I was one
like
of
I said, there's
people.
Right, there's levels.
I went up to that. Everybody who made it in this business in any form back then when they were just trading was one of those people because that's how the business worked. Like, that was what the market was about. It's not that those – I think the back then the people who were now on the floor trying to just grab value from the people were the people who back then were just sliding cards out of people's binders and sneaking them out that way. Like, I think the different category of people, those were even more shady people. Like, that's how everyone used to trade back in the day. If you knew your prices, you knew your prices. If you didn't, then you got the other person.
Right. Well, I think the difference then was, you know, hey, if somebody undervalues a card by a couple dollars, you don't correct them, but you don't come out and when they say, how much is this worth, you lie to them about it. I think that was always the line for me. You know, if somebody brings a $20 card and says,
that's a fair assessment.
Yeah. I mean, cause like you said, we, you know, back in the day, that's what we all did. That's how you traded. And there, you know, it's honestly not that different than what goes on now, except that, you know, there was just less knowledge all around, even if, like, maybe our margins weren't that different.
Okay. So to bring this back together. We're not talking about the ethics of trading. That's not our finance 101 or how trading has evolved or what has become. This is what happens when the deal sounds like it's too good to be true or what's going to happen when you enter these trading situations and you feel they're not going right. You guys want to jump onto that?
I think the biggest thing to remember is just the ability to not always feel like you have to make a deal. Sometimes it's better just to, you know, I wasted 20 minutes of my time, but I'm going to walk away and waste 20 minutes and not $20 or 20 minutes and $50. You really sometimes just have to, you know what, even if it doesn't end peacefully, like I've gotten up from the table and just told people to go, you know, put things in places where they don't belong. And that's, I'm not saying you should go away from the table in that situation, but if that's like, if someone's going to get in your face so much about it in that point, that usually means they are. Like if somebody's really angry at you for trying to just say, you know what, I don't really want to make this trade, they were probably trying to get you anyway.
And the other side of that is don't be paralyzed. Don't be like, oh God, I'm just going to not even take my binder to the event because some binder grinding shark is going to come up. He's going to pull my pants down. I don't want that to happen. I'm too intimidated to trade. Everyone's got smartphones. You know generally what a card is. You know that Corsair Crufix isn't $3. So if you're doing the trade, you're picking up something you need, you're getting rid of something you don't care about, don't be afraid to just make a deal. Don't be like, nope, this is off by 25 cents. You know, it's $2 in their favor on Star City, but you're using your little TCG player app and it says, you know, it's 50 cents and you're losing 50 cents on the trade. And it's like, no, sir. Like, just don't worry so much. Like, no one's, you know, it's most likely that nobody's trying to rip you off. You know, that, you know, no one's out to get you. Just make a trade. If it's not, like, super off, it's going to be obvious that it's not super off. And if, like, you have the internet, everyone has the tools to make the trade even. So likely what they're doing is just getting something. They're, like, trading away a $1 card that buy lists for a quarter for a $1 card that buy lists for a dollar. Like, that's what I do all the time. So, like, why look that up and, you know, make the trade take an hour? Just don't be too afraid. If it looks pretty close on the app, you're getting a card you want, just make it. That's what trading's about. Back in the day, people used to trade a rare for a rare, and nobody gave a shit. You know, it's like my Sheevan Dragon for your Bird of Paradise, and it's off by $4, but, like, who cared? Like, I'm not saying, oh, don't worry about it, you know, don't get ripped off. I'm just saying, like, don't be so paralyzed with the thought of losing $2, you know, that you just don't trade at all. And I know how bad it feels to really lose bad on a trade. If you look it up, it's like, oh God, I thought that was, you know, $15 and it's actually $30. I like that sinking feeling in your gut. It's the worst ever. But don't be so afraid of that you don't trade, because honestly, most trade scenarios are going to go fine.
Right. So, you know, these days, now that the, you know, maybe the shark trading market is kind of not as much of a thing anymore. The next line, as we all know, was counterfeits and the Chinese counterfeiting scandal that, you know, not only brought about the new card frame for Magic 2015, it got a lot of people very scared. Well, Wizards updated us this week on kind of where they're at in that and what they've been doing. And we know they've been working, you know, hard behind the scenes more than you know, out in public. You know, but they say that they have significantly slowed the major ring, the counterfeiting ring from China, and that those people have been, you know, not brought to justice because China basically doesn't care about counterfeiting laws. But they've stopped the production of cards. They also stopped somebody in the United States who was acting as a primary distributor of those cards. So, you know, this counterfeit thing is something that a lot of people care a lot about and have a lot of very strong opinions on. How did you guys view Wizards update that they have made some progress in the fight?
They've never been so candid about some things. You know, like we've had a lot of the suspensions over, you know, public humiliations, and the way that they distributed the suspensions has been very just like mystique and shrouded, and the way that they were very upfront about how they handled the situation. So it was nice to get that transparency from Wizards. And I think they handled it correctly. Like I feel confident that they're going to protect their intellectual property, and they got everyone cooperating. So, I mean, people are giving up information. So they got, it's going to shut down stuff pretty quickly that way. So, it looks like, you know, next time this happens, this is going to get shut down. So it looks like they're on this, I think this is a positive all around.
Do you think, I've seen some people draw the conclusion, they also released the annual report, and Magic is basically flat year to year. It was down some single-digit percentage points. And there's a lot of reasons you could, you know, attribute to that, but one of them I've seen people float around is that the idea that the counterfeits actually, you know, impacted their market. I'm not sure exactly how much I buy that or not, but I think that today's announcement from Wizards will do a lot for consumer confidence, and it should. You know, I don't think any of us have seen the counterfeits as, you know, destroying the market locally or even nationally, at least in the United States. But I think that this is definitely a step in the right direction for Wizards.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the counterfeits plenty, not to, like, step on it for too long, but obviously these ones were clearly fairly well fake, and now they've got everything handled. It doesn't seem like there will be too many more coming in, and as long as they don't upgrade the quality, there really won't be a big scare this time around. Give another 2 years, it'll be back again. Every couple of years it pops up. But yeah, like, it's interesting that Wizards is being so upfront about that, and yet so closed off about the whole Magic Online thing. I mean, that kind of bothers me, but I mean, I guess at least they're being open and upfront about something.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty vastly different situations, I think.
I think that you should still handle the PR the similar ways. Like, tell people what the problems are. You might have some listeners that actually have some idea what the heck's going on, and our listeners, you know, players.
For sure, I mean.
Well, if you want to hear some of the problems, listen to Limited Resources, LRCast. Marshall did a new cast called 101.
Wizards itself releasing this information. It should.
I mean, but what do they say? Know what the
shit on their parade? They know that things are wrong. Everybody knows that there's problems. They just need to come out and say, these are the problems we're facing. This is what we're trying to do. Like, just, I don't know. I don't want to go into
this. But they work within a corporate structure in Hasbro. And if you, like, JR Time Elemental, he linked the Hasbro CEO talking about, you know, quarterly earnings. And he is so detached from what Magic is about and what Magic should be. Like, you know, like they live within a corporate structure and they gotta abide within those reins.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I don't know. I think that they know what the problems with Magic Online are. What are they going to do? Release an announcement and say, hey, we know that you guys don't like how the new graveyard box works. So we're going to fix that. Like, of course they know what the problems are. It's just question of the time it takes to fix those things.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to the cast, the 101, Marshall did, he did have John Locks on there, and John Locks pretty was very candid about the whole reasons and the frustrations behind Magic Online.
Right.
And he does not paint a picture that looks very pretty in the future. Like, they're going to be moving at a snail's pace, and it doesn't seem like, you know, there's a fire under their ass in any shape, form, or fashion. And partially that could be because of the hands being tied by the corporate structure. I don't know
how much that is.
It's going to be an entire podcast in and of itself, too.
Right. Like, I mean, I guess with let's take it back then to the counterfeits. I think it's good that there's progress being made. The card frame is another thing against it. You can, again, the kind of like Jason was saying, don't be paranoid. Not everyone who sells a card for less than the market price is, you know, selling you a counterfeit card. You know, like, don't worry about them, because in all likelihood, they are not going to be entering your play area. There's just not that many in comparison to the amount of legitimate cards out there.
Bam!
Bam! Let's never talk about that again, ever.
Yeah, I hate counterfeits.
I agree. Jason, you have an email to read.
I have an email to read.
And it's
not Scott, it's Steve. Scott Wolf was the guy in Party of Five, right?
This is Tim.
No, fuck you guys, the guy that wrote our theme song. Hey,
I'm smarter than
you guys. Stop correcting me.
Steve Wolf.
Yeah, Steve Wolf. I called him Scott Wolf because of the fucking guy from the movie Double Dragon. I'm really sorry, it's Steve. I'm sorry. Steve, can you write us a reader email song? Thank you.
Hold on, wait. Should we do picks of the week at some point?
Let's do those
at the end of the thing.
Let's make Ray do one, and then we'll laugh at him.
We'll talk about no. Hey, do the reader email, then we will talk the Pro Tour with Ray, and then that will lead hopefully into picks of the week.
Yep, and then we'll call it a day.
Yep.
Okay, so Steve, if you're out there, please write us a reader email song, because we really like the pick of the week songs. Moving on to the reader email, this is from, as these guys have said, very condescendingly, this is from a man named Tim. And he writes, hey guys, I fucking hate this podcast. Not really, just wanted to hear Jason say that. I had an idea for a topic for your Finance 101 segment. Sealed product. How many boxes of a new set do you open? Do you save any? Do you have a story out if you were going to open that much? What about supplementary products like Commander or FTV? And he asked this because it relates to a specific question he has.
I believe that he means store or out. I don't think it's supposed to be story.
Yeah, that could be. Autocorrect is a real bitch.
It is.
yeah, it's probably, do you have a store slash out if you're going to open that much?
Yeah, we feel you, Tim.
Yeah. Autocorrect's a bastard. This relates to a specific question he has. I have a sealed box of Modern Masters and a playset of sealed Mindseas. Nice. Should I try to out my Modern Masters box now since it is Modern PTQ season, or is it good enough to sit on for the long term? What about Mindseas since they're printing more? I still haven't seen any around since stores still have the other four sitting on the shelves. Thanks, guys. Tim from the Bay Area, which is Marcel's backyard.
Yeah.
This email was probably sent a long time ago.
Probably.
Sorry we didn't read it earlier because I'm not so bullish on Mindseas now that they printed so many and True Name Nemesis is cheaper.
You know what?
Cheaper.
It's modern season, and that is the same season in which this email was sent.
Yeah, so
which was
This is improvement.
It's within the last
improvement. Yeah, this is good for us.
Yeah, either way.
God, we were going through our emails like, oh, this one's from 2012. Can't read that.
Here, I'll start this one out with the obvious. Your four Mindseas, put them up in your closet. Forget you own them. Forget you possess them. Look in your closet in like 2 years and be surprised when you have $80 Mindseas in there.
You think that's the one that's going to get there?
I think $80 is going to be the low end, and I think the one with the primal, what is it, primal vigor? That'll probably be the 100 to 100.
He's referring to Devour for Power, the Prosh deck, which is, Ryan agrees with my and Corbin's assessment that that's the one for long term.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, there's just so many good cards in there that by themselves, and obviously you get the Soul Ring and stuff like that that'll always help.
So,
not to detract from that, I think we all agree there. Am I wrong? I mean, anyone else have any other plans for besides just
what
like,
else are you gonna, what else are you gonna do with
it? I'm not bullish on the Mindseas, and here's why.
Already owns them. I'm not saying
he
already owns them. I'm saying you just put them in your closet, forget about them. You're not getting out of them for what you got into them at even right now. Just forget you own them for a year or two.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
But
that's
as
true.
Far as the Modern Masters box goes, this year we really saw the first year where Modern was stable. We haven't seen a ton of price spikes. I mean, there's definitely been a couple still going on in the last month or so, but they're usually pretty minor. It's maybe a card that's like just started seeing play, stuff like that. But we're not seeing like Modern just influx itself every time around. Like you're not saying, oh, this new deck popped up. Here's a ton of $20 cards all of a sudden. And that really just shows like the people, and we've talked about this on the show before too, these people finally have their cards for Modern. They're finally like, Modern is stable. And so your Modern Masters box isn't really going to be that much higher now during Modern season for the PTQ than it would be any other time. And I think that that's one of those products that even if they reprint Modern Masters 2, the likelihood of the crossover there isn't going to be too much that you really have to worry about it. And I think that that's only going to retain value as it's, you know, the first Modern Masters will probably hold some value just for being the first, especially if they continue to do more. And at the same time, there's a lot of cards in there that are very expensive and it doesn't matter. Like, Tarmogoyf's already proven itself. If you reprint it, it's just going to go up in price. So, unless you need the money now, I don't think you're in a big rush just because it's PTQ season to get out of it.
Yeah, and what we've seen with PTQ season this year is that Modern is truly finding its place as an eternal format. Prices did not spike in season, and you know there's probably a multitude of reasons for that, but one of them is simply that people already had their Modern decks. It's not like Old Extended where they get into their deck for the season and then get out of it at the end of it because they are forced to play it. So I agree that Modern Masters is going to be good for a long time because if they do print Tarmogoyf again or Dark Confidant, they're both probably going to be Mythic. And even if they're Mythic and Modern Masters 2, the prices are not going to dip all that much on those sealed boxes of Modern Masters 1. No reason not to just hold on to those. Modern Masters boxes have done nothing but steadily go up for the past 6 to 9 months, even though the prices of Modern itself have not necessarily gone up as much.
All of which is a very fair assessment of the current state of affairs.
Yep. Anything else? Anybody else have anything to add? I think that's pretty well summed up the email.
Well, thank you, Tim, from the Bay Area for writing in to tell us you hate us.
I actually do have one question for Marcel directed at him for this. With the Modern PTQ season, since you pay more attention than I do to Magic Online, I guess it's kind of you for you too, Ray, if you pay any attention. Have the Modern prices of cards been going up with the PTQ season, or have they been holding pretty stagnant this year? I haven't really kept track.
They hit higher during the time that they were rising, right around when Scalding Tarn was going up, so around GP Montreal. That's when prices started to rise, and I think people bought in. They have been pretty much steady. Some cards have been rising, like Restoration Angels up to like almost $10 now.
But the format as a whole has just been slowly going up?
slowly going up or staying steady, or some of them slowly declining, actually. I expected a lot more stuff going on, but I guess people got their cards that they needed and the decks they needed early on.
I just wanted to see if that reflected over to Magic Online. If I know Magic Online, a lot of people just will play it in preparation for a PTQ or for a GP. So a lot of times there's a lot more, like, of the prices maybe going up right before that weekend, and it doesn't – I was curious if Modern Season was causing that this year. So I know it did last year.
So I do know –
like, just like real life, people are picking up most of their cards on Modern and holding on to them on online.
Yeah, and Pod did go up. But like, I was going to look to buy some of the Pod components, like Noble High Arc and Voice of Resurgence, that was declining until the Banned and Restricted came out. And once that was announced it wasn't banned, people started to buy back into it. So I don't know if that's an indication of anything, but it was definitely one of the cards that rebounded from the Banned and Restricted announcement.
I personally am not playing Moto until something changes. I haven't been on. I played one daily since version 4 been on, and I'm not. Yeah. I just refuse.
So apparently you can't stream on version 4, because I was going to get my first stream up and going today after finally deciding to play Vintage Masters Draft, and I couldn't get it to work.
You can. This is convoluted. You got to do
not
a screen
on my computer. You can't. Oh, no.
Oh.
I mean, it just bogged me right down. Like, my computer, it's not, you know, a great gaming computer or anything like that. It's just a laptop, but it's above average. I mean, it's only about a year and a half old at this point, and it should be able to run, especially Magic Online. And I had no problem with, you know, the old program. I just never got around to streaming, and I was really hoping to get on that with V4, and I don't know that I can do it until I get a new computer.
You know what? I hate to say I can tell you something to make you feel better, but it may just be that. Version 4 has gotten better as far as memory leaks, but, you know, I don't, you know, there's other people that are streamers, and they're having similar problems, so until I can see them changing it around, I think you're going to be in a shitty position.
Yeah, I mean, it might just push me to go get a new computer earlier rather than later, but, I mean, streaming is a small facet of what I want to be doing right now, so.
That's Stockholm Syndrome right there. Like, Moto runs like shit on Ryan's computer. He's like, yeah, it's probably just my computer. I don't know what's wrong. Moto 3 worked. I really need a new computer.
I mean, not to go on Moto for too long, but I really, M4, it feels like they downgraded. Like, I feel like I'm playing on cockatrice now.
Because you don't diss cockatrice, that's what I'm doing now.
Because of the whole pop-out window and everything. Like, seriously, I just feel like I'm playing on Apprentice.
Like, sweet.
The whole point of playing on Magic Online is, like, feel like it's a little more advanced. Like, yeah, I have to pay money for these cards. Half the pictures aren't even up. I feel like I'm actually playing on Apprentice.
Oh, man.
I'm playing on Apprentice that I have to pay for. That's what I'm saying to you, Wizards. I know I'm never getting hired in that company now, but Wizards, get rid of Apprentice and make Magic Online a real thing.
Hopefully. It's not it's
They've
not
probably never
that
heard
bad.
That before, Ryan, so it's good that you told them.
That's I'm sure brand heard- new. Hey guys,
hey, hold
you
up.
Should fix Moto.
You need a tweet. You got a tweet worth right now, and then put all that in the tweet.
I'm not gonna.
You
do
also
that.
Gotta tie or tag Helene because you know basically you have a problem in life.
Yeah, because that's what she does. She's here to babysit all your needs.
I broke a chair earlier and I tagged her in a tweet.
I wish her job were more fun because she's legitimately a great person, but it's. Like, and it's not always people being shitty. Sometimes it's like, hey, these people have 250 people at a PTQ in a phone booth. There are no chairs, and it's in a phone booth. What do we do?
Well, shit, my Big Mac didn't come with cheese, and I had to hit a tweeter. She found an answer.
She likes to call me Ramon, but she, like, has an accent when she does it. So.
Oh, yeah.
So no, I let that happen.
She calls me Ramon, too, because she thought I was Mexican.
So let's not libel any Wizard employees here.
Is it libel on a podcast?
And then she
yes, it's broadcast, Jason, so yeah.
Huh. I would have thought it would be slander because it's spoken.
I mean, I think the fact that it is published is what makes it libel, and podcasting counts as publishing.
Corbin, you should know the difference between this.
He does. He's explaining the difference.
All right. It never happened. Charles Ramon, that's the end of it.
I can't hear you. My internet's bad. Yeah.
I'm like, I'm giving Jason the legal definition for why it's libel and not slander. And you're like, you should really know this, Corbin.
I should really know this. I fucking went to law school.
Did you?
Yeah. I went to MSU.
I didn't know that. I thought you went to like, or, never mind.
I was
thought
going
you
to MSU law when I met you.
He didn't say finished law school. He said he went to law school. He finished chemistry.
Gotcha.
I knew better than to finish law school.
Ray, you, we've talked a lot about a lot of finance so far. You have this non-finance thing coming up called the Pro Tour. Why don't you tell us what you've been doing to get ready for it?
Well, I've been playing a lot of what we call level one. I don't know if that's a technical term, but it's a term that I basically have heard, and so I've been using it, where it's like level one is the decks that people write about are in standard or whatever format you're in. Like, for instance, right now it's like mono blue, mono black. Mono green wasn't level one until Todd Anderson and all them start writing about it and doing well at the Open or whatever with it. So now that's become level one. So I'm just playing a lot of level one Magic, trying to figure out basically where the format's going to be at, figure out like any type of weaknesses I can, or, you know, get up in, and yeah, just start level one. The bulk of the testing is going to happen at the Pro Tour house this time. But
who are you teaming with for this Pro Tour?
I teamed with MTG Canada Pro Tour with Sean McLaren and all those guys. And this time I'm going to be with those guys again, but Sean McLaren he's part of our team, but he's not testing with us. So he's basically the one person who's on the roster who's not with us right now. Like, he still is going to wear the shirt and everything, but he's not in our testing core. So, which is fine because he's a lone wolf. He can, he likes it better that way, and, you know, more sport for him, man. He won a Pro Tour by himself. So, you know, he has something going for him, and he knows how to work it.
Okay. So, you know, what are your impressions with M15? You know, say right now where standard is at a couple weeks before the Pro Tour.
A couple weeks before the Pro Tour, I think that, for instance, Mono Green wasn't a deck. It was a very fringe deck. It had a lot of holes in it. I think through, like, just the brief testing and what I've done, the green deck is very good. There's cards in it that were printed, like Genesis Hydra. I haven't really played too much of Genesis Hydra myself, but I've heard good things about it. Nissa is very good. I've done the whole, like, Todd Anderson first put out a version that had Dark Steel Citadel in it, and making it indestructible is pretty sweet. But, like, those type of cards are really good. That kind of pushed it up to the front line. I don't know if it's going to be good enough to win a Pro Tour or do well at the Pro Tour, because now it's, like, basic knowledge that it's out there, so people are more apt to play against it. And Mono Black, for instance, started playing Lifebane Zombie main deck just because of whatever reasons. I'm not a Mono Black player, so I actually don't know the reasons. But now it's really good because everyone's playing these green decks and stuff. And with Corticalling put in the format, I think that those decks will continue to go on, but
So do you think that the Pro Tour, and you know, I understand obviously there's still a lot of testing for you to do and you don't want to avoid too much or anything like that, but do you think that it will be a collection of decks that we have seen over the past 6 months with some new cards? Or do you think that because it's a Pro Tour, because we have a new set, things will actually be shaken up a little bit?
I think they'll be shaken up on a certain level. Like, for instance, Mono Black is going to be a major player at the Pro Tour. Regardless if it's winning or losing, it's going to be there. It was deemed the best deck beforehand. It got a couple good cards. That's going to be a player. But I think that, like, the breakout decks are going to be just like what you said, where it's like Mono Black splash green for Nissa or something like that. Or, you know, I don't think there's going to be anything right out of left field that's really going to surprise us. Like, how?
No, like blue red artifact deck, not gonna be
right.
A thing.
Like,
no,
like that deck right. Is cute. I've played against it, and I've never played it, and I played against random people or with the deck, and it's cute. I don't know if it's a player. I haven't put too much time into it myself, and I don't know if any team's willing to put too much time into it. But I know personally, we're not gonna find it if it's there. But like, yeah, I don't expect no deck like blue red artifacts to be a deck. But I do expect, obviously, Corticalling was reprinted. It's no secret. That's a very strong card. It's been spoke about multiple times. So I feel like there's probably going to break out Corticalling deck, whether it's going to be in a mono green shell like Devotion, or if it's just going to start its own genre of decks built around it. I feel like that's probably going to be a really big breakout. But everything else, I think, like, you got to compete with tuned and refined decks like Mono Black, Mono Blue, Esper Control, Blue White Control, Jund Monsters, these decks that were already very good, and nothing really got too much of a boon outside of green are from M15. So I think until you see the standard format rotate with cons, nothing is going to be like super like, oh wow, I can't believe that happened. I wasn't even thinking about that. I think it's like, oh, you're so clever. You played turn one, thought seize, turn two, sign and blood. Like, congrats.
I mean, potentially. This is also the interesting time in the format where, like, if there is a major event, sometimes you'll see that deck that, I mean, there's a couple of, I mean, cute combo decks that are potentially possible now. I don't think any of them are necessarily good. I'm not saying that's what you're going to see. But because Wizards is less concerned about this three-month gap between, like, the formats, sometimes you'll see decks that aren't necessarily busted, but are just something, like, nobody really expected. Because those cards weren't supposed to interact for very long, so they didn't really care that they interacted in a way that maybe wasn't, like, profitable to the format itself.
Sure. Yeah, like, it's definitely there's a lot of room for innovation in that sense, but because this format in particular, it was just so honed and so beat over and over and over again. I think it has a lot to do with not even just the decks, but also with just how Magic in the day and age happens. Like, every year it's just going to become more and more, like, week one is going to last literally week one. After that, it's no longer like, okay, if this deck's good, people are going to see that, like, Mono Black wins an open, and then people are just going to jump on that and then tune, and then see
what you have. Do you think that the fact that there are so many mono-color decks because of Devotion being pushed has led to that, maybe that increased rate of normalization this year? Because there's simply not as many options if you're a monocolor deck.
Yeah, I think that, I think it could. Like, Nykthos had more so, involvement with not black, like in the beginning of Black Plated, but I think that after rotation, like, it's not gonna be too good. Maybe it will with cons, but a lot of the boons you get from the Devotion decks.
You lose, like,
You lose, like, Night Vale Spectre. Yeah, you lose Burning Trance. Right. You lose a lot of key components, Boros Reckoner, and all these Devotion strategies. For instance, at the last Pro Tour, which is black format, there wasn't a Devotion deck. There was, like, a green Devotion deck that was possible, but it was less about, like, Burning Tree and Exploding, and more about just trying to play as many green symbols as you can, and then try and abuse something. So I think that the Devotion strategy is going to take a huge hit. Until we see what Khans has. If Khans has, you know, a Burning Tree-esque card or a Night Vale card or just, like, multiple Devotion in it, then it's possible it could rise again. But as a whole, I think the sets that we've had available to us are a huge reason why Nykthos has been so dominant. And once those sets come out, then Nykthos is probably going to go by the wayside until something happens.
So we've known you as a control player in a lot of big events, but you know, like, you won PTQ with Pod, so the combo. I mean, what do you want to play? You know, given that, you know, you're probably going to lean towards the best deck, but in your world, what kind of decks do you feel most comfortable with?
I will have no secret about it. I've never said it in public, but we've all taken our role in, like, basically playtesting and what we want to try and see in this Pro Tour. And I did not take the control role. I took the quarter calling role. I've been in love with quarter calling since I've played it in Pod. I didn't get to play it in Standard, so I don't know how good it was when it was Standard in Ravnica, but just playing it in Pod, it's just been absurd. So, the night that it was spoiled, I freaked out in the hotel room at the last GP because it was spoiled, and I was so excited because I needed two more and it got reprinted, but more so because I was more so excited to see how powerful it can be. And so if I could play anything and make anything work, I would definitely play a quarter calling deck. And so that's basically where I've spent a lot of my testing so far before I get to the house. Mm-hmm. And there's some promising things. I can't really talk about what promising things, but quarter calling is a very strong Magic card.
Well, how do you look at it at $10? Do you think it's a pickup at $10? Do you think that's about where it'll end up? If you look at a card like Thoughtseize, which I think is a very good corollary. Do you think,
I think Thoughtseize sees way more play to
Well, court. Hey, yeah, cause it's been legal for a week. Let Ray talk.
Yeah, I never agreed with Quarter Calling being the $35 or $40 it was beforehand because it was only played in Pod and it was only played as a three of. It's not in Legacy. It wasn't in Standard. It wasn't in Vintage. So I never agreed with the price in the first place. And so I'm perfectly fine buying them at 10 or trading for them at 10.
Well, you think I'm telling you, like, for our listeners.
Yeah.
It's a card that can go up from 10. Will it get played as much as Thoughtseize to justify it being the same price, or is it going to just be like a lesser tier card and therefore you trade for them at 10 because that's about what they'll be?
Yeah, no, trade for them at 10. Like, when they get over 10, I would not touch them because they will go back down to 10. After this Pro Tour, I can maybe see them spike to 20 for a little bit, but they're going to go back down to 10. 10 is a fine number to get them if you're a player and you want to use them. It's a very powerful card. It's cross format, so at least worst case scenario, you can trade them to a modern player or just have trade fodder. I personally like the new pitcher now; it's grown on me, so I have my Ravnica ones in my trade binders currently.
There's also the whole, even if Court of Calling is not a huge player at this Pro Tour, which if Ray has his way, it will be. But after rotation, you kind of get this fact that, hey, quarter calling is probably the best inspired enabler we have. Just a thought, so.
Yeah, Ray, do you see people tapping a pain seer to quarter calling a dude out there?
It is an idea. I have personally not explored that idea. Maybe I will now. Got some handy-dandy knowledge. But, no, I just think that there's just so much room for Cord to be insane. I don't know how broken it will be. It probably won't get banned because it's not that insane. But it could be inspired. I'm not sure. I really haven't played too much with inspired. I played a little bit with the blue-black deck from Black, but the mechanic as a whole hasn't really intrigued me. But it could be possible.
So let's talk your, you know, personal career, Ray. You have right now a top 50 Pro Tour finish. You have a top 16 Pro Tour finish. You know, you said if you win the Pro Tour, you obviously win Rookie of the Year. What are your goals going into this? You know, obviously pie in the sky, top 8 win, you know, but do you have any specific goals, that you want to hit this tournament?
Yep. I know going into the last two tournaments of the Pro Year, which is Grand Prix Boston and the Pro Tour, I want minimum to top 16 the Grand Prix, which will give me 3 points, which will put me to 30 points, and allow me only to need 5 points to hit gold from the Pro Tour, which is a lot more attainable. I think 5 is top 100, if I'm not mistaken, maybe top 75. But that's the minimum. If I can do just the bare minimum of what I want to do, I just want to get at least 3 points from the GP and then enough points from the Pro Tour to lock up gold. That'd be ideal, just so I don't have to fall off the train. But, you know, if I top 8 the GP and then do well at the Pro Tour and hit platinum, then that's really what's going to catapult me into my next tier of playership.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, because obviously you want to get to where you're not just – to where you don't have to PTQ to lock up some Pro Tour invites.
Right, right. Yeah, PTQs are brutal. Even though I've won the last two out of – yeah, the last two I played, I won. But before that, it was such a hurdle that I don't wish that upon anyone. If you could qualify for the Pro Tour, I hope that it's not from a PTQ because those are very gut-wrenching.
Right, right. Okay, so I have one more question to take advantage of your knowledge while you're here.
Sure.
I'm going to Star City Dallas next weekend, so if anybody who is listening is there, I will have tokens to give away. I'm looking forward to going out to the event. I'm considering playing in the event. It would be my first event to play in that isn't, you know, a pre-release or an FNM since Grand Prix Vegas of last year. You know, I may not play at all. I may just go down there and hang out, but I kind of actually like the idea of playing standard. Maybe I could play mono blue. It'd be like playing Merfolk. I don't know. What do you think is the most powerful deck in standard, not counting things you've tested for the Pro Tour? What do you think I'd be best off doing?
In a nutshell, mono blue is very powerful. I've had great success with mono blue. It definitely would fit your play style if you like Merfolk. That's why I was playing it for a while in standard when I was testing modern with Merfolk back last Pro Tour. Or two Pro Tour. If not that, you can't go wrong with mono black. It takes a couple, or I can't say it's very easy to play.
Yeah, I have a little experience with basically the major decks of the format between borrowing decks and FNM. But it hit me like a couple weeks ago that I haven't actually got to play mono blue. And I saw somebody play like Tidebinder Mage into Thassa, and I'm like, we're just playing modern here. I think I can do this. Like, yeah, so it seemed like that may be fun.
If mono blue curves out, it's really hard for any deck to beat him, including control. If they go like turn one, Judge's Familiar, Cloudfin Raptor, one of those two, turn two, two drop, turn three, Thassa, or Nightville, it's very hard for any deck, even mono black, to beat them. Majority of my wins versus mono black were because I went one drop, two drop, three drop, and possibly a four drop or something else. But yeah, that deck is very powerful. It has an insane engine where once it gets going, it cascades out of control very quickly to the point where it's very hard to come back, even through a Wrath. So I think that if that's the deck you're looking at, that's a solid choice. Obviously you'll have a lot of I won't say crossovers because you have like counter spells and stuff like that in Merfolk and Bile, but a lot of the intricacies of like combat math will be there. And it's a very powerful deck. I expect a lot of it at the Pro Tour. I expect not much to change with it because the deck's so solid as it is. It's won so many tournaments, just like, hey, I have the 75 from when Theros came out, deal with it.
Right.
But it's very powerful.
Okay. And then, I'm like giddily excited about possibly playing, which is weird because it's just been a long time since I played.
Foil islands.
He unironically used the word giddy, so right there, you know, that's serious.
Anyways, okay, well, yeah. Just thanks for letting me pick your brain there. It may be kind of fun. I'm just going to, you know, grind out all 9 rounds. I don't care how I do, so.
I will say one more thing about Mono Blue real quick. It doesn't mulligan well. So keep in mind that when you play it.
That's fine. I don't want to shuffle more anyway, so I'm not going to
Fair enough.
Mulligans are for quitters.
All I got to say is thank God I quit playing Standard back in December. Like, I am not missing a damn thing. I'll get back into it in November. Fuck this shit.
You're gonna feel the same way again in December, Marcel.
Yeah,
no, it's
that's
not.
That's how Standard is.
No,
this is the most exciting Standard is ever gonna be because we have, like, a sliver deck possible.
Are you kidding? 2 years ago, like, literally 2 years in December, 2 years ago, they had, like, the meta was changing every 2 weeks.
Delver? Like, is that Delver year? Like,
yeah, that was near the end of Delver
years. Oh my gosh. Yeah,
but it did.
People complained about that like crazy.
No,
that was Delver Thragtusk. Come on.
But it still changed. Like, I mean, eventually it morphed. Like, you know, the decks actually, like, there was no one consistent deck. You had Mono Devotion. Literally Mono Devotion in December. And I quit playing Standard. That's why I'm playing Legacy now. And now I look at it like, that's the same.
I don't know.
Deck.
We have had Jund Monsters come up since then. Red White Burn has come up since then.
But yeah, that was
me personally. I did not want to play the last GP that was Standard, but I did because I had to go to it because it was a GP. And if it wasn't a GP, I just wouldn't play Standard. If it was an open, I would have skipped it. If it was a PTQ, I would have went because it's a PTQ. But if it was a 5K or something else, I just wouldn't have went. I was very thankful that M15 came out and got to put some new life into Standard because it was getting pretty, oh, turn one thoughts, he's okay, that's cool, you got me. Or, oh, LOL, rev for 10. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, it was getting very stale. And I like the Delver format. I like the Stoneforge format. I like these formats that players bitched about constantly.
Good players like Stoneforge, right? Because Cobblade was very rewarding to good players.
Well, like, even Delver. Like, I was playing Delver when everyone was playing Thragtusk, and I Vapor Snagged him, and I got mad, and I still tried to win. But, like, that was fine with me. And, you know, when Junk Rites was out, I was playing Esper Control, you know? That's fine. They can have Sim Collector and Obsidat. I'm just going to try and kill him. I had fun. Jund was everywhere. I'd still Bonfire and kill me. Okay. But this format was, oh, LOL, I rep for 10. They're Skullcracking. Ah, damn it. Come on. Like, I've lost 2 winning ins at events, whether it be a GP or an open, because of Skullcrack as a card.
Yeah. And I just gotta be appalled because I love Ravnica. Like, that's brought me back to Magic. That brought me back from Revised. Literally, I quit playing around Revised or Homelands. Like, I quit at Homelands. And I got back in because of Ravnica, because the multicolor was so awesome. And Time Spiral played so well with that. Like, I was able to play multicolored for 2 years. All of a sudden, we got Ravnica back. I was so excited. We got our Shocklands great. We played multicolored for a year, and all of a sudden, it hit a brick wall, which was Mono Devotion.
They got burned by Thoughts. They got burned by reprinting Thoughtseize in Standard, to be honest.
Thoughtseize is pretty brutal.
No,
large
and
part of it.
Mutavault.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's reprinting modern. It turns out that when you reprint staples in Eternal formats, they're also going to be good in Standard and warp the format around them. You know, I mean, Thoughtseize limits the type of things you can do. Mutavault certainly limits the type of things you can do. They got burned by reprinting modern cards.
Well, I hope they don't take this as a lesson that they're not going to do it again. What if call according? All of a sudden, whatever, I'm drunk. Hey, what if that, you know, causes another ripple in Standard and it's another dominant thing for the next 2 years? Maybe they might be reviewing their reprint policy, and then I think that's just a bad thing, but then I guess.
I mean, it's rough, because, like, at the same time, if they didn't do it, we're complaining about $70 Thoughtseize.
Yes, Thoughtseize was $70. Like, it was absolutely a good thing for everybody that they reprinted it. Because if it wasn't Thoughtseize making people discard, it would be a different card ruining everybody's day.
I mean, yeah, Thoughtseize in particular is oppressive. But
it's very oppressive, very, very. So,
yeah,
I mean,
but everyone was bitching about Sphinx's Rev, like, you know, 6 months ago.
Sphinx's Rev is still something to bitch about.
It took so long to get to the point where it's oppressive. Where if you go turn one Thoughtseize against a green deck, take their guy, then turn 2 Killspell or Pack Rat or whatever, turn 3 Lightbane Zombie, like, they're starting the game with literal 5 cards, and you have a body and a card and knowledge of their hand. Like, it's really oppressive. And I, like, every time I see a swamp plate, I'm like, please don't thought seize. Please don't thought seize. Please don't thought seize.
The argument around it is that, for instance, if Lifebane Zombie is good, you can play around it by playing fewer green creatures. If Sphinx's Revelation is good, you can play around it by playing faster decks or Skullcrack or something. If Thoughtseize is good, there is nothing you can play that makes that card less good. And that's the problem.
You can play Absolute Bailoff.
They just choose not to discard it.
Yeah, you only keep Smiter hands. It has to be five times the Smiter.
You know what? I have, as people have Thoughtseize Smiters. It does happen. But
it's rare.
I hear you. When I keep four Tefls, three lands, and they thought sees me, I just smile as a control deck. I'm like, not going to give me this time.
Not going to do anything till turn 12.
Hey, I have Scry lands. I'm not trying to do anything till turn 4.
Yeah, so I mean, I whatever. Reprint policy, hopefully it keeps working and they don't print stuff that was busted. I mean, they didn't realize this was going to happen. Like, when we had Aaron Forsythe on the cast, like, he thinks the guys, or he is expecting the guys at least to make an impact in Standard. And he would be disappointed if they didn't. And, you know, they reprinted the release vows, and it just doesn't look like the guys will be able to do that unless, you know, Karns actually gives us some support, which would be weird if it gives us support without increasing the devotion. The only way that could work is if, you know, it's wedge colored and two of the wedge colors works towards the multicolored devotion, you know, possibly. It'd be the only way that could possibly go down. But yeah, whatever.
I've given up on the Future League making things happen when they printed Batterskull to fight Vengevine. And then they found out that Stoneforge was the card.
That literally, that's what happened?
I bought 100 copies
from
the
people of
Stoneforge.
That I know from, like, that have connections went out, they're like, yeah, man, Batterskull was printed because Vengevine was destroying the Future League. And then when they put it out there, they're like, oh crap, you can Stoneforge for it. So like, if they're like, oh man, these god decks, like, yeah, that's probably a thing in the future, but I mean, from what I understand from like listening to Jerry Thompson talking podcast or whatever when he was in there, you have a lot of guys who are very smart and who are either old pros or like pros from like a couple years ago or whatever. And they are very smart in making the cards and making sure stuff's not too broken. But at the same time, they also try these wacky things that may or may not work.
Well, they've talked about how it's not just about finding the most powerful things. It's about making sure the format is fun to play. So if they put together god decks that were at least competitive, they probably felt like they did their job.
That's fair.
And I cannot fault them for making release vows. And, you know, the guys, like, you know, the guys became dominant. I don't think that would have really been fun. We would have been bitching and moaning about them like
they're indestructible.
They're pretty good. Yeah, they're pretty good in Commander. I have to imagine that were they good in Standard, they would be frustratingly good.
Purphoros is probably bannable in Commander. I don't think it's going to get banned, but like it's if it got banned, I think everyone would go, I can see that.
I had that happen to me like 2 days ago. The guy played the Purphoros deck. First time I had it happen, and it was just embarrassing.
Like, if I can tutor for a creature in Prosh, I'll get a Purphoros over anything else.
Like he played turn 3 Purphoros, and on turn 4 we took 16 damage each.
Well, thank you guys. You could live your dreams in this fucking altered reality that people don't really live in. Now, let's get back to some real magic, right?
Hey, Commander is real magic, all right?
Commander matters for finance, like if you don't think so.
We've devolved.
Yeah, all right. Anyways, well, big thank you to Ray for coming on the cast before we go any farther.
Thanks for having me again, guys. I appreciate it.
Shut up, SS.
We will be following you on the Pro Tour, and I hope to see you doing well again.
I hope I can do it. I hope I can have it. Just give it to me! I will say, having been on the podcast, there's multiple people who like see my shirt and they're like, oh man, nice shirt, and I'm like, yeah, thanks. Like, so are you, do you listen? I'm like, yeah, I listen. They're like, oh, that's cool. I'm like, do you know who Ray Future Pro is? They're like, yeah, I've heard him on the show. I'm like, I'm Ray Future Pro. They're like, get the fuck out of here. I'm like, yeah, man, it's me.
In the rookie of the year race and people recognize you from our fucking podcast.
Yeah, like, it's 100%. Like, I played against a guy in the last 3 GPs. Or I showed him to Ryan, the one, like, there's a guy who was like, oh my god, you're Ray Future Pro? And I ended up beating him, and I was like, yeah, here goes Ryan. And like, I introduced him to him. He's like, oh, this is insane. It was just like, I've gotten so many people who are like, oh man, you're Ray Future Pro? I'm like, yeah, man, that's me. And they're like, it's insane. It's a crazy feeling.
A fan came to my LGS because he heard that was where I hung out.
Nobody ever recognizes me. It's actually kind of different.
How does the tokens make you feel? Like honestly.
Oh, the tokens are absurd. People are still harassing me for them. They're like, hey, you got any Ray tokens? I'm like, man, those have been gone for a long time.
They are for sale on the website.
I got to replenish. I got to replenish right here.
I got blown out because they needed tokens to fill orders. And I was like, oh, I got those. And I looked and I didn't realize they sent me like fucking three bricks of just Ray tokens.
At the pre-release of M15, they were casting Raise the Alarm. And people were just like, I'm going to cast Raise the Alarm and use these Ray tokens. And I'm just like, woo, that's me. It's my alarm.
Yeah, people love at the pre-release when I finally showed up with like four brand new ones.
Awesome. Yeah,
it was pretty insane.
I got the Doog zombies.
We need to do I vote goblins next.
Goblins sounds good. Yeah.
Hey, Jason, have those, you said you have the zombies? You said?
I have like one stack of Doog zombies.
I'm going to shark people in trades for the zombie tokens.
Yeah.
You can't look up the price of the zombie tokens.
They can't, they're a dollar.
No, they can't. It's not there.
Makes sense.
They'll go to tcgplayer.com and type in our zombie. I'm like, sorry, bro. It's a $5.
Just
call
us on him zombie token.
Yeah, exactly.
Same price.
Yeah, Richard Garfield will make this one.
You think they're going to have dragon tokens on the next one?
That'd be insane.
So my new outlandish calls for this set, just to keep stacking things on for my internet fame when I'm right about everything. We are getting the Grove of the Burn Willow cycle, not the fetch lands, I think. Because I think it balances out perfectly with the pain lands. And I think Frenzy is going to be a mechanic in the block.
Frenzy?
Gross.
I don't even know what Frenzy is.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.